The Warrior Soul podcast is written, edited, and produced by me, Chris Albert. Our mission is to provide tools, tactics, strategies, and ideas that help the U.S. military veteran community to show up as the wisest, strongest, most capable versions of themselves in the civilian world. If you're not a veteran, stick around because anything we talk about will most certainly apply to you as well. This podcast is made possible with the help of F-Bomb Nutrition. They make delicious packets of fats that you can carry around anywhere with you in little portable packets. They make macadamia nut butters. They mix them up with chocolate. They mix them up with sea salt. They mix them up with coconut butter. They're absolutely delicious, and they're really good for you. They don't have any sugar. They also make a lot of cheese snacks. They make meat sticks, and it's just a great company. These guys send packages of this stuff to the troops who are on the front lines overseas to supplement their MREs, and we didn't ask them to do that. They just did that on their own initiative. Really great company. If you want to get 20% off your first order of F-bombs, head over to www.droppingfbomb.com and use the code WARRIORSOUL at checkout. This podcast is also brought to you with the help of Save the Brave. SaveTheBrave.org is a 501c3 charity for veterans. They run camaraderie events that include fishing, golfing. They also do a lot of work with Gold Star families. And unlike a lot of other organizations, their board doesn't take a salary. Really great organization that is doing amazing work. So go and check them out at SaveTheBrave.org. With that, thank you guys so much. Let's get into today's programming. This is Chris Albert, and I'm here to remind you of one thing. Someday, you're going to die. Now, that's not some morbid statement or scary idea. It's solid fact. Your time here on this earth is limited. And we need to be reminded of this as much as possible for one simple reason. To live your best life while you can. This is the Warrior Soul Podcast. Transition in life is often difficult. It forces you to grow. It forces you to learn. And sometimes it forces you to cut away bits of your past, bits that weren't serving you anymore. My guest today is also a past guest on the show. We've done quite a few episodes together, and he's an old friend. His name is Mike Ergo. He's the host of the Transitions from War podcast, and he's an Ironman triathlete. If you're not familiar with his story, you should definitely go back and check out some of the shows we did. You should also check out his podcast, Transitions from War. But Mike is a former drug addict, and he had battles with substance abuse, battles with infidelity, and a lot of internal battles. And this guy has completely turned his life around. Today, he is an Ironman triathlete. And he just made the Kona Ironman Triathlon for a second time, I believe. And he is currently raising money for Gold Star families. Every race, he carries the name of a fallen brother with him. And he's worked to raise money for Gold Star families and has helped a lot of Gold Star families. This is just a really good dude who's made mistakes in his past, completely turned his life around from those mistakes, and is now working to really help the community out and help the world out. And I love this guy. So with that, let's get into this conversation with my friend and fellow Marine, Mike Ergo.
Got it. All right. We've synced up. That's good.
Nice. So what's going on, old friend?
Dude, it is good to talk to you, man. Happy 2020.
Happy 2020. For those of you who don't know, Mike Ergo has been on the show multiple times before. I think almost more than any other guest. We've talked quite a bit. And great dude. And for those of you who haven't checked out those other episodes, I highly suggest you check Mike's story out, as well as his podcast, Transitions from War. But you got a lot going on for 2020, right?
Yeah, I got a lot going on. My main goal right now is I will be racing in the Ironman World Championships in October, and carrying a flag for the entire marathon portion. That's the run for a fallen Marine from 1st Battalion, 4th Marines. I know his mother pretty well, and she actually helped me start. We co-founded what we call the Gold Star Initiative. So it's veterans and Gold Star families teaming up at an Ironman race to remember the fallen. So this is the first time we're going to bring it to the national, actually the international stage, the World Championship. So to say I'm stoked is an understatement, because I am so pumped up for this.
That's the thing. Like, so Kona is like the Super Bowl of Ironmans, right? Like,
dude, it's Super Bowl, World Cup, World Series. Yeah, it is. That is like the triathlon dream race right there.
And in that race, you're going across like multiple different terrains, like climates. You're running over lava, like all kinds of crazy stuff, right?
Yeah, they set it up in October, which is when the big trade winds come in. And those are the winds that, you know, push the Polynesians from Tahiti up to Hawaii. So it gets a bit windy. And so, yeah, you start off swimming, 2.4-mile swim in the ocean. And since it's so warm, no wetsuits, but the swim is so cool. You're basically getting to sightsee and see turtles and fish while you're swimming. Mm-hmm. And then the bike ride, though, is a tough one because of the winds. And the winds kick up, and I've seen videos of people getting blown across the road. And I had a couple moments the last time I did it where, yeah, my butt was puckering because coming downhill, probably 30 something miles an hour on a bike is really fast.
Yeah.
And just getting blown across a lane just out of nowhere. So that's what makes the bike course challenging. And of course the wind and just like feeling like you're not getting anywhere pedaling. And then the run, when you want a breeze, there is no breeze. So they really designed this course perfectly to inflict maximum suffering. But I mean, it's a beautiful place. You're in Hawaii. Don't get me wrong
there. Yeah.
You know, after the first few miles though, you head out of town on the run and you are just, yeah, running through lava fields. And unless you are, you know, a pro or someone who's going to finish in less than 10 hours, it's the tropics. So the sun goes down pretty quickly. And the last time I was there, I was, you know, running through the dark, literally, and came in. You're on your own. A lot of the races, there's people along the sides of the course cheering for you, you know, clapping, ringing cowbells and all that stuff. But this one, you're just kind of out with your thoughts and your doubts.
Last time, yeah, we talked a little bit about that. And you're talking about how you can go to some really dark places, while you're out there. And actually, I interviewed Nick Bear he's the CEO of Bear Performance Training. He's actually going to Kona too. Nice. And he'll be out there. He's a fellow veteran, but he was talking about the same thing. Like you go to some really dark places while you're out there. And I remember you saying it's like, you're facing these things, but it's also like, it's like meditative and therapy at the same time, right?
Yeah. There's the mental battle is there. And I love the mental battle. Like in the moment, it's tough. Excuse me. It's tough. Cause I remember my mind went to really dark places, especially this, cause my legs were hurting really badly. And I just started replaying things in my head, like memories from combat, friends I lost, all that stuff. But then being able to refocus myself and just shift my perspective, that is the coolest thing for me about endurance sports, is going to a negative space and then deciding, okay, do I want to keep this narrative of everything is bad and I'm in pain, I don't like this, I want to be done, or do I want to find out how I can refocus my mind and say, oh, okay, my legs are in pain. That means I have legs. That means I'm alive. I'm getting a race like in the Ironman World Championships in the arguably the most beautiful place on earth, and see my mood change that way. I mean, it's tough when your body's in a lot of pain because it wants to default to everything sucks. But being able to do that and then the feeling of freedom you get when you realize you don't have to resist feeling uncomfortable anymore, but you can just let that be there and continue on with what you're doing. I love that part about it.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And how you are you able to recreate that during training, or is that something that just comes during the race and during competition?
It happens during training when things get tough, when the, you know, you increase the speed, do some in like intense intervals. For me, that happens a lot in the pool. So I'll be swimming, and I swim with a lot of fast people, and I'm arguably the slowest person there. And so when I'm trying to keep up with some really, you know, really quick intervals and, you know, doing, you know, hundreds and 200s at a pretty quick pace with not a lot of breath, there's times where I want to give up. And so being able to refocus my mind there happens. The bike and the run happens sometimes too, but that's usually what happens with training for these kind of events. Is a lot of it is aerobic heart rate. So you're doing the training a lot slower, but I mean, it's long distances, very slow, very low heart rate. And so I think what happens, the mental battle becomes, oh my God, okay, this event's 6 months out. It's really cold. It's dark outside. I don't want to be here. What if I just, you know, stopped? What if I did something else? So that, like, when you wake up and when you're out there in the cold and there's nobody clapping, there's nobody giving you attaboys, it's just you in the dark running. Yeah. That's where the mind can introduce doubts and say, well, what if we just put this off maybe later? So the huge buildup is another mental thing to get through, trying to take it one day, one session at a time, and actually focus on what you're supposed to be training, whether it's cadence, whether it's your form, or whatever it is.
The when thinking about this, because I mean, it just seems like a sport like triathlon, there's so much prep, there's so many things to worry about, so many variables, right? Like, so the type of bike you're riding, right? Like, I'd be the guy who showed up with, like, you know, a 1985 BMX bike or something like that by accident. You know what I mean? How do you educate yourself about that? I know there's probably tons of information out there, but you probably have people who are mentors or people who are teaching you about, like, the technology of the bike, how to do the transitions, all those, like, little things that add up to being able to compete at that level, right?
Yeah, the gear is intimidating with the sport. That was my first impression of the sport, is just seeing people in, like, really bright spandex clothes that had these bikes that looked like fucking spaceships.
Yeah.
You know, and all this stuff, like back wheels that didn't have any spokes because they were like a solid disc, and it looked like just something from another world. So that was intimidating because I had no idea what that stuff was. So to put all that stuff together and to know how to have the right equipment to set it up in your transition zone the right way, so it's the most efficient, so you can quickly take off, say, your swim stuff and put your bike stuff on, or your bike stuff off and run stuff on. That mostly just takes experience and practice. And I think, just like a lot of other sports or activities, people can get intimidated to the point where they don't want to start because it looks scary. And fortunately, I'm someone who's used to being embarrassed and being in embarrassing situations. So I said, you know what, I'll just figure it out. And I did it completely wrong the first 1, 2, 3 times. And then eventually I got a little better. But I think it's more about just the willingness to be okay with either making a fool out of yourself or just making mistakes in front of other people and being fine with that. And that's really the way I have to learn. Like, with the way I do anything is, okay, I'll just see how this goes, and then I'll get some feedback. Probably either that was terrible, what are you doing, or good job, keep up with that. So that's how I've approached the whole thing.
Now, you're also a family man. You've got a wife, you've got kids. Obviously the training for this, it takes a lot, right? So you're probably up earlier in the day and then maybe getting a little bit in throughout the day and stuff. But what's your training schedule like, and how are you managing the time between work, family, and training for this?
The work family, the balance between family and training is probably the most difficult aspect for me because it takes lots of intention. And I'll tell you what doesn't work is just having a training schedule without your partner or without your family on board or aware of what you're doing. Recipe for disaster, and it's going to build up a lot of resentment for at least the longer courses that take a lot more training. So what I have done is beforehand talked with my wife and said, hey, this is the training. One, before I got into the sport, said, hey, this is what it's going to take. Are you okay if I do this? How can we plan this too? When she said she's okay with it, how can we plan this so it impacts the family minimally? And so, yeah, it involves lots of early mornings. So I get up, some days I get up at 4. Mostly I'm getting up at 5 and putting in an early morning session for about an hour to an hour and a half during the weekdays. And then during my lunchtime, I'll have a run or a quick cycle. And then I save all my afternoons and evenings for the family. And then on the weekends, I'm getting up really early. One thing that saved me a lot of time and made me more accessible for the family too is I have an indoor bike trainer. And so it's like this, like I have my triathlon bike set up on a stationary trainer. And one, it's a harder workout because you can't coast. But two, it's good because I know when my kids get up, so I'll start like at, you know, at, let's say I get up at 5, start at 5:30 or 6, and I'm doing like a long bike ride on the weekend, you know, anywhere from 2 to 5 hours. Well, I can offset, you know, the time away or mitigate how much, you know, time away that is the impact on the family by taking a break when I hear the kids get up and making them breakfast. And then they'll usually watch cartoons for a little bit and then go and get back on my bike. And I'm right there too. So it makes me, that took a lot of planning because I wasn't sure how to do that, but I seem to have found a groove. And then for the long runs, you know, it was easier when my kids were a little smaller and they could take a nap while I took them on a double stroller. But now they like my son's 3 and he wants to just get out of the stroller and run with me, and he can run for like a block. So, and then he's tired.
Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. My daughter actually is really fast. She's going to be probably a good distance runner, I think.
Little girls are always faster than little boys. I remember getting my ass kicked by little girls when I was a little kid. I just, and they'd come and beat the crap out of me and stuff, but
yeah. That's awesome. So that's a different now, but so like my runs again, I'll just be early in the morning
you got a treadmill desk too, don't you?
Yeah. I'm working on getting a new one. Cause I wore it out. I burned the motor out of it.
Oh man.
That was a good thing too. I'm glad you brought that up because that helped me. Okay. So for like my warm up and my cool down, I could still be typing in notes, talking on the phone, doing whatever I needed in my office, and then be gone for like only half an hour out of the office. So it looked like I was doing less working out than I was.
Right.
But the other thing about having a treadmill desk that really helped with my training, it helped just shake out, you know, that lactic acid just by walking it out. And it really improved aerobic fitness just by simply walking at a, you know, even a not even that fast of a clip.
That's amazing. Now, the other aspect to this, we talked about this quite a bit before on the other times you come on the show. You've experienced addiction and you were an addict for a while. And do you feel like this has been something that's replaced that in your life? Or is this something that maybe is extending your life in other ways and helping you to build pathways to continue to beat that addiction?
Yeah, the addict mentality can be applied to a lot of things. And in the endurance world, I see a lot of people in recovery, a lot of former addicts. And because there's an extreme quality to this, especially with these longer distance events, you know, it's the addict mentality would be, okay, one's good, two's pretty good. So let's do 500. And that can get applied to, you know, these ultra marathons or things like Ironman or like, There are races that are 2, 3, 4 times as long as Ironman for the ultra psychos. So I think the way people approach them, the intention they approach them is really important. And at times it has become something similar to just a replacement addiction. It's like, okay, I used to have alcohol, you know, cocaine, cannabis, pills, but now I have this that I'm going to put all my energy into. And the way that I and a lot of mental health professionals define addiction is something that you continue to do despite the adverse consequences that take up a lot of your time, either to obtain it, to do it, or to recover from it. So you can insert a lot of things in there. And there's people who will take this fitness thing to an extreme length where it becomes unhealthy. So what I've done is just keep checking in with my family and just keep checking in. And the cool thing is I have a wife who will be real with me, and she will say what she's thinking. She'll say if this is working or not. So I get some good feedback, which is nice, to stay accountable, to stay kind of real. I don't have a partner. She's not someone who'll just sing my praises all the time, say, wow, good job, keep going. So that is very helpful to keep me, you know, humble and real.
Yeah. You need somebody like that in your life. It's so important, especially a life partner. You know, if you don't have that, if you don't have somebody who's constantly just, you know, holding that mirror up to you, not taking you down, but saying, hey, you can do better. That's so important.
That's that sweet spot, isn't it? Because you don't want someone who's just going to doubt you and bring you down, like you said. But if you want someone who's going to give you good, honest feedback, and you can see that they're doing it through compassion, but keeping you humble. Because if not, then we can delude ourselves. I can delude myself.
Right. And that's the thing. I've been in both kinds of relationships. I've been with somebody who constantly tried to take me down and constantly, was really negative. And then I've been with somebody who's constantly challenging me, and that's the relationship I'm in right now. And that's amazing. And the thing is, what I've found is you have to grow into that to be able to handle it. Right. You have to grow into it. If you're with somebody who's constantly taking you down, a lot of times, like, it's not just that other person who's being negative. It's also you that's allowing it into your life and doing things that's enabling that. A lot of the times, and what I tell younger guys, you've got to be matured to the point to where you're going to recognize yourself and you're going to know yourself enough that you're going to be able to handle somebody who is going to be able to challenge you in positive ways.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think we do know deep down, but there's a lot of noise where we can miss the signal. Mm-hmm. So I think with all of us who are human, who have mental chatter, which is, you know, every single person, doing something simple as sitting down to breathe. And even if you don't call it meditation, sit and breathe and just notice your body. These things will come up. You'll get a better signal of what's happening. Because when we do things, we usually get feedback, you know, about how that feels. That doesn't feel good. That feels right. That feels okay. But if we live in our heads, we can just block it out. So what I'm doing this year, getting back into meditation, I'm just doing just a little bit, just 5 minutes in the morning and maybe some later during the day, but without overdoing it, just enough to get back in touch with that. So I can tell, because you're right. You can develop that sense. You can really hone that and know yourself. And that's what the professionals, I think, on every level are doing, is they know themselves so well. They know when to call their own bullshit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's big time, because I mean, you can fool yourself like crazy. You really can.
Easily.
You lie to yourself more than anybody else does. And I've lied to myself over and over and over again. And I know you and from your situation, just knowing you as a friend, I know you've done it before and I know you've overcome it. And it's just like, it's something that we all got to overcome. It's something we all got to face in our lives.
Yeah. And that's the thing with feedback from people who, even when it's constructive criticism, it stings. It sucks.
It's so bad. Yeah.
You know, it's like, I hate it in the moment. I like when my wife will tell me something that I know to be true, but I just don't want to think about it, or if I ignore my kids or something that's inconvenient to how I see myself. I hate it. I brace against it. I feel it. I want to shut down. I want to get out of there. But I've developed a tolerance for it because I know it in the context. Like, just because something's uncomfortable doesn't mean it's wrong or doesn't mean it's bad. There's a different kind of discomfort. You know, there's the discomfort of like when we're really, really training hard and it feels like, okay, I want to stop. But, and then there's the discomfort of hearing someone tell you an inconvenient or uncomfortable truth and wanting to protect your ego or your self-image in your mind. This is stuff that happens at an unconscious level too. So being able to sit with that for a second, that's where the things like breathing meditation come in, because you can notice these things come up and just allow them to be there. And it gives your body some good training of just how to accept things that are not comfortable, but you don't have to run from.
Right. Right. And that's, yeah. It's just crazy. It's crazy because, and it comes from doing hard things, because if you're doing hard, difficult things and you're not prepared for it, that's when it's going to face you. Just like you said, yeah, on the runs on an Ironman, like that's when you're facing your demons. I mean, same thing is true. Like if you're going on an entrepreneurial adventure and you're starting a business and you, after the initial excitement wears off and you're out there and you're trying to make money, and there's nothing coming in, and you got to face whatever it is that's going on and fix that problem yourself. That's when those demons start to arise, you know, at least in my case. And then, you know, there's so many things you could do in this life where you're not going to have somebody right there, like we did in the Marine Corps with our NCOs and with our drill instructors looking over your shoulder. Yeah, it's just you. And that's the thing, like, though boot camp might have sucked at the time, or you might have been crazy, you might have been dealing with some NCOs who are really on your ass, there's going to come a time in your lives for you young guys out there where you wish you had somebody like that, and you praise the Lord that you actually experienced that, but you'll wish you had it again.
Yeah, that's true. When you have to have that own, have that inner voice for yourself, to regulate yourself or to remind yourself of the things you've accomplished and overcome, that it's harder. It's just harder, but it's something that I think we don't have to face alone, you know, define that community. But it just, again, it comes back to intentionally setting it up, putting those people in your life. But like when we were in the Marine Corps, like just in the barracks, that's there. You're just around, living around people all the time. So you don't have to put any intention into it. Mm-hmm.
Hey guys, I hope you're getting a lot out of this interview. You know, the Warrior Soul podcast is built with the mission to empower its listeners to live absolutely epic lives. And that's why we recently created a group called the Warriors Obituary Society. This group is built to empower its members to live epic lives worthy of epic obituaries. And it starts with an 8-week development program. And with this development program, what you're going to do is you're going to outline a vision for your life. You're going to get very specific about what you want, because without that specificity, you don't know where you're going and you don't know what you're doing. From there, we help our members to develop specific goals, objectives that they are going to push toward, and that their fellow members of the Warriors Obituary Society are going to hold them accountable to. From there, we're getting down into specifics. We're going to help you to develop and customize your own personal fitness and nutrition plan to help to fuel your body and fuel your mind for the quest ahead. From there, we're going to work on your personal finances. We're going to help you to knock down debt. We're going to help you to start saving money and to create a plan so that you can start investing in your dreams. Then we're going to get into your business and career. We're going to help you to develop the skills that you need to develop yourself so that you can have a major impact in the field you choose. If you choose to go into business, we're going to help you to set up the foundations that you need to create your own company and get started on your path in life. From there, we're going to be working on your relationships. We're going to help you to develop a world-class network. And all along the way, you're going to have your fellow members of the Warriors Obituary Society pushing you in every single area. We meet once a week over a live call, and we're constantly communicating over our own private forum on Slack. We don't do anything over social media, and that's because I don't want anybody feeling like anyone's looking over their shoulders, and I don't want you exposed to the crazy, distracting alerts that you get on Facebook and some of the other social media platforms. Normally, programs like this cost thousands of dollars. This one does not. For the price, it is the best development program on the internet. And that's because our mission here at Warrior Soul is to empower people to get more out of life so that they can in turn make the world a better place. We've got a great mix of active duty military, U.S. military veterans, and civilians in this group. We wanted to keep it really eclectic so that we get a lot of different types of views up there and a lot of different people with different areas of expertise. If you think that this is something that would be of interest to you and that this is something that could empower you to live your absolute best life, head over to www.warriorobituarysociety.com. That's www.warriorobituarysociety.com, and you can sign up today. And if you have any questions about it, just reach out to me at chris@warriorsoulagoge.com. That's chris@warriorsoulagoge.com. I'm happy to even sit down with you for a phone call for a few minutes to see if the group is right for you. I look forward to seeing you guys in there, and let's get back to this awesome interview. I want to talk a little bit about the Gold Star families and the names that you're carrying around with you. You mentioned the Marine that inspired you to do this, and the Gold Star mother who's helping you out with this stuff. Who was that Marine, and can you talk a little bit about that story?
Well, I was inspired to start racing in honor of somebody else when I first encountered Ironman, and I saw a video of a woman who was honoring her husband who had been killed in action, I think in 07. And she started an organization, not on purpose, but by just going out to run to deal with her grief and to remember her husband. So she started wearing a shirt with his name on it. And something about being able to have a different relationship with grief and remember my friends that have been killed in action was just it, like all the pieces came together. And I said, oh, okay, I don't have to sit at a bar and, you know, like cry into a cup of beer about my friends. Like I can still feel the feelings, but I don't have to do that in a way that sucks. I can deal with grief out in the race course. So after that, I ran the world championship. I was back in my hometown in Sonoma County, and they made me the ambassador for this, the Ironman Santa Rosa, because they're celebrating their 40th year of Ironman and wanted to make it really memorable. And so they asked me what I wanted to do to make the race different. And so I said, I want to race in honor of a local fallen hero. And I wanted to present that flag to his family at the finish line. And they said, okay, well, you think you can run for an entire marathon with a flag? And I knew, I had that knowing that, okay, yeah, obviously running a marathon is difficult. Adding to that by carrying a flag makes it more difficult physically. But the purpose and finding the why in my mind gave me the resolve that I knew I wasn't going to stop. It made it easier to harness my focus and drive. And so I carried the flag at Ironman Santa Rosa in 2018 for an Army Corporal, Josh Kynock. And I gave the flag to his family at the finish line. I gave it to his daughter, who we barely had met, and to his mom. So that experience was so cool because I was able to do something that helped people. I was able to race, something I love doing, but I was also able to help people to heal and help people deal with their own grief. And I was able to let the community be part of it too, and showing their support for the family, showing their support for veterans. And so it brought together veterans, the community, and Gold Star families who can be isolated from each other. So eventually I met a woman who's wearing a Killed in Action bracelet, that black bracelet that we see a lot of times on people's wrists, and had a name on there. And I just, she's volunteering at an Ironman. And I said, "Hey, is that your son? That bracelet?" And she said, "Yeah, it was." And I told her my story. She told me her story. And her son was in 1st Battalion, 4th Marines, a guy named Nick Anderson, who was killed in action in November 12th, 2004 in Iraq. And I talked with her. I said, I think we can do something really cool together, because she's involved in Ironman, I'm involved in Ironman. And so eventually we put the pieces together. I said, let's make this flag carrying thing a national movement. Let's see if we can get other Gold Star families and other veterans involved. And the Ironman Foundation allowed us to create what we call the Gold Star Initiative, where we pair up a veteran to carry a flag for a Gold Star family at an Ironman race and give it to him at the end, and then build that relationship. So we've done that now. We did that in 2019 through 4 different races, and then in 24 different Ironman races. And then 2020, we're going to have 10 different races where we're having veteran carry a flag for a Gold Star family. And so what we're hoping is that by bringing it to the World Championships this year in Kona, that it's going to really give it a lot of attention and a lot of people to help fund us and a lot of people to help join in and carry a flag themselves, or connect a Gold Star family who's really hurting so they can be honored. So this is a jumping off point for us. And it's so exciting, because to see the look on the family's face at the end, or during, just knowing that their kid is remembered and that they're not forgotten, that makes like every single training session, every single painful step on the race course, it all worth it. I can't tell you how much I love it.
That's amazing. Now, you've also got your podcast, the Transitions from War podcast, which is an excellent show. How's that been going? And what are you guys doing these days as far as growing the show and growing the audience? Are you talking a lot about your training?
You know, I was invited to be a co-host of another show last year that I've been putting more of my energy on and figuring out how to do these two shows at the same time. But so originally Transitions from War was talking about everything. Usually it's the motto is from combat to active living, trying to help people make that journey when they get home to find purpose again. And I found that through physical activity. So that was the push, the main gist and focus of the show. I co-host a show called Age Groupies, and we talk just about mental health and endurance sports, you know, for the age group kind of amateur athlete perspective. And so I talk about most of my training on that show. And then the Transitions from War, I've been talking to just a lot of veterans who have made that transition, or subject matter experts who know about things like meditation, grief, addiction, whatever things that either vets can benefit from or they might struggle with. And so the show is taking on a more narrow focus. So it's been an interesting year trying to figure out how to balance those two things. But I'll tell you what, I love co-hosting. So it's much more fun, like, you know, where you can talk with someone else than having to listen to myself talk all the time.
Yeah. People don't know podcasting is difficult. Yeah. I don't want to seem like a martyr or anything like that, but like, I mean, it's hard, especially like when you're trying to come up with new content, you're constantly trying to come up with new guests and things like that. But I always thought you did a really, really good job.
Appreciate that.
You know, when you're putting information out there, and I think one of the things I think going narrow, for those of you out there who are thinking about going narrow, is actually a better thing. The more focus you bring to a show, the more your audience is going to be engaged, because it's not about getting a million listeners. It's about getting people who are really involved with what you're doing and what you're trying to do, and who are really going to listen and who are really going to benefit from what you're talking about. And so I applaud you for having the courage to do that in the first place.
Yeah, I think you're right. And everything I read about how to grow an audience and make a good show is, yeah, you find a specific audience to talk to, because I think for a little bit, I just experimented with how I did the show and worrying about trying to please everybody, a show for everybody, which is like really, so a lot of times a show for no one.
Yep.
Because you know, when you really connect with something that you consume, that you listen to or see, and it feels like it's speaking to you, that's the powerful stuff.
Yeah. And you got to be passionate about it, because like I said, this is difficult. Like for those of you, I mean, most of you are listening on audio and watching on video, but we got up at, we're doing the show at 0600. So it's like, yeah. You know, you gotta get the schedule going. And then Mike's got a full-time job, you know, pushing this stuff out. There's a lot of gear you got to do for it. But if you're going to get a podcasting, do something you're passionate about and bring some meaning to it, because that's what really matters. If you don't have meaning behind it, if you're just getting into this because you want to become famous or you want to become, you know, this or that, it's you're going to give it up. You got to really have a purpose behind what you're doing and really want to help the people who are listening.
Yeah, that really ties into to how I've come to really embrace endurance sports, because I don't know if we talked about the last time we chatted, but there's the three types of motivation. There's external, internal, and pro-social. The external is you do something to hope to get validated by someone else. It's like, you know, like going to the gym to hope, you know, you get like a six pack or just so girls will notice you. Okay. That's one form. And then the internal motivation, I'm going to do this because I want to become a better person, or for, I want to accomplish this goal because this will help me improve X. And that's a deeper level of motivation. And then there's the pro-social or way of looking at something. If I do this, this will benefit other people. And that, studies have shown, is the most powerful. The finding a why that involves benefiting other people seems to be the most powerful way to stick to something that's difficult. So if you find something you're really connected with, something that you know is going to benefit other people, that's going to help you stick through those like mornings where you get up, you're like, I'm tired, it's cold out, I just want to go back to sleep. Well, other people are expecting or dependent on me. This is going to help other people. That's what can help you, you know, get out of bed versus hit the snooze button.
That's like what Viktor Frankl says with logotherapy, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Our primary, driver is meaning, purpose, fulfillment, like that, and not pleasure.
Right, exactly. And gotta plug that book again, Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl.
It's a good one.
I think it needs to be required reading for everybody. Like, everybody's got to read that book. And for those of you who don't know, Viktor Frankl survived the Nazi concentration camp for 3 years, and then wrote about his experiences in that book. And then the second part of the book is, he was a psychologist, and the second part of the book is his analysis and his critique of Freudian theory, and his kind of addition to it, which is this concept of logotherapy.
Yeah, I love it. That's the cool thing, is it doesn't have to be service and doing fun, or doing things doesn't have to be a miserable exercise. I've learned in the last few years that you can serve people doing something you enjoy doing that's passionate. It doesn't mean it won't be hard, but my picture of like meaning and service before, for some reason, I just had this idea of it's like doing miserable things like digging ditches or filling sandbags or picking up trash, you know, like, oh, that's service.
I wonder where you got that from.
Yeah, exactly. Police calling the quad, picking up cigarette butts, you know? But then I realized like, oh, you can actually enjoy service and want to be there, even if it's difficult. So I'm learning a little bit as I guess I grow up.
Yeah, no, exactly, man. Well, dude, it's always a pleasure speaking to you, man. When are you heading to Kona?
I'll be heading there first couple of days of October, and there's big build up to race week. So I'll be plugging a lot of the stuff via Instagram and Facebook. But one thing I'm doing to help fund this is I'm raising money for the Ironman Foundation, which is the body, is the organization that funds the Gold Star Initiative. And so I have a page, you know, we can link to here.
Definitely.
That you can support Gold Star families and veterans healing together through the Gold Star Initiative directly. And I set a goal. I need to raise $30,000 by September 25th. Already, just by putting the word out there, I've had friends and family donate a little over $2,500 just in the last couple of weeks. So we've got a lot further to go, but I'm seeking out some corporate sponsorships, and I'm seeking out just a lot of people who want to be a part of something that is really going to change the way we look at healing and the way we change the way we look at grief and how to honor the fallen.
That's awesome, man. We're definitely going to get those links up there and make sure that people are following along with you and giving some support here for this effort. And where can people find your new podcast, and where can people find you on the internet and follow along with you, with all your social media and podcasts and everything?
I think most of it goes through Instagram, and it's just transitions_from_war. And then, I have my Transitions from War Facebook page. my other show that I do for endurance athletes is called Age Groupies, and that you can find that on Instagram at Age Groupies, or just look on iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud, all the places, you know, you can download this podcast. And that's geared towards amateur athletes, first timers, or, you know, up to people who've been in the sport for a while, a way to just make endurance training fun and less intimidating and not so serious. So you can find that the same place you can find the podcast Transitions from War. And then, that's where I run just about all my stuff through.
Outstanding, man. Anything else for our audience out there before we jump off?
Ooh, I'd say if there's one thing I've learned that's been really valuable, is that doing important things that help other people and bring you fulfillment and connection and just a sense of really feeling alive, it can be so fun. And it does not have to be picking up cigarette butts in the morning, right, or picking up trash on the side of the highway. I think we all bring something different. We all get excited about different things. So I'd encourage anyone to look at what makes them really excited to get up in the morning and see how they can use that to help other people. And you will notice just how much fun and how big a sense of fulfillment and joy you can get by doing that you probably would not have imagined beforehand. And that's what, for me, that's what life's about. And it's so cool. I love it.
That's amazing, man. That's amazing. Well, dude, I want to acknowledge you. I've known you for a few years now, and you put so much passion into what you do. You put so much passion into this service that you're bringing, and you put so much passion into this quest that you're on. I know you've been through a lot of suffering in your life. A lot of it was self-inflicted, like a lot of us. And what you've been able to do is you've been able to grow, and you've been able to analyze how you were actually inflicting that suffering on yourself. And then you were able to bring something to the world that is reducing the suffering of other people. And I think that's great. And that's the track we all want to be on. So, Mike, you're an awesome dude, and I love having you here. And I'm looking forward to seeing you cross that finish line in Kona and you know, all these amazing things happening for you. So,
hell yeah, brother. Thank you. Appreciate that, man. And hey, don't forget to drink water, meditate, and kill bodies.
Change your socks.
Exactly.
All right, ladies and gents. Well, this is Chris Albert and Mike Ergo. And like I said, we'll get all the links up for the show notes on the show notes for this episode so you guys can follow Mike on his journey and take some of these lessons with you guys. Get out there, do something, find something greater than yourself to dedicate yourself to, and get out there and live your best lives while you can. This is Chris and Mike, and we are out. All right, guys, I hope you enjoyed that conversation with my friend and fellow Marine, Mike Ergo. Like I said, he's just a great dude, just doing amazing things out there for the community, for the world, for Gold Star families, and really enjoy talking to him every time I do. You should definitely check out his new show. You should definitely check out his stuff. We'll get links to everything up on the show notes. And I want to thank you guys. Thank you guys so much for listening to this show. Thank you guys so much for helping me to build this movement. Right now, I mean, we have literally increased our downloads over the past few weeks by 100%. And this thing is growing like crazy. And it's growing because of you guys. I'm just the person who puts this show together. You guys are the ones that spread the word. And, you know, I can't tell you how much I appreciate that. I want to keep this momentum going. I want to get into the ears of every veteran that we can. And the way we do that is by having you guys continue to share these episodes and by having you guys head over to iTunes and write us a written rating and review. Like I said before, I don't care if you ever buy anything from me. I don't care if you ever pull out your wallet and give Warrior Soul or myself a penny. What I do care about is that we are reaching ears, that we are getting out there and actually changing veterans' lives. And the only way that that happens is if that word gets spread. So if you can do me the biggest favor in the world, doesn't cost you anything, just head over to iTunes and write us a written rating and review. It helps so much to spread word about the show, and it helps us to get this information into the ears of more veterans. And if you want to support the podcast in other ways, you can do so. You can head over to warriorsoul.shop. We've got some awesome t-shirts that you could buy. If you want to support yourself, you can join our mastermind, the Warriors Obituary Society. And that's a great group. We're changing lives there. We are empowering our members to live absolutely epic lives worthy of epic obituaries. But if you don't want to do any of that stuff, just write us a review. Share the episodes out. And that's 100% okay. And I still love you. So with that, guys, I want to thank you again so much for listening. And we will be back at you later this week or next week with some more awesome content. This is Chris Albert, and I am out.